My commentary for today. Well, I guess there's no rest for the wicked. I returned from a nice vacation and planned to gradually ease back into my radio show. Last week was a breeze. Interview two interesting guys on a fascinating subject. Piece of cake. This week I was going to let you guys carry the load. You guys call in, and all I had to do was keep the show moving, keep call-ins on track, and remember to be polite while doing so. But no! The powers that be had to decide that the public needed a diversion from the economic ripoff and the possibility of holding someone of importance accountable for allowing and encouraging our agents to torture helpless prisoners, and from stopping the largest economic scam in history. So lo and behold, we have the specter of a health pandemic. The swine flu. Be afraid. Be very afraid. So my plans go out the window, and today we're going to examine various aspects of this alleged health menace. For purposes of simplicity, we're going to separate our examination into several parts. Firstly, is this really the health crisis various organizations want us to believe it is? Secondly, if it ain't what it's claimed to be, why would they promote it as such? And finally, the most insidious and controversial theory of all, that it is not natural in origin but man-made. So hold off on calling me in sympathy that I have to get serious before I want to. Here we go. First, let's take a look at this alleged latest threat to humanity. What do we know for sure? An outbreak of something seems to have started near Veracruz, Mexico. When I wrote this, there were 26 confirmed deaths. Well, I hate to bring up cold, hard facts, but people die all the time. The aged, the very young, the infirm, and the healthy. So the natural first question to ask is, just who was it that died from this new strain of flu? Were they healthy and cruelly struck down in their prime of life? Or were they of marginal health, and damn near anything would have pushed them over the edge? The media forgets to tell us. Then there are reports that this specific strain of flu is cropping up all over the world. Really? How do they know? As far as I know, flu symptoms are sort of like a really bad cold. No one turns blue or immediately loses a limb. So how are health authorities, especially those in third world countries with marginal health systems, so quick to know that whatever someone comes down with is flu and this particular variety of flu? Or are they just jumping on the bandwagon? Keep in mind that there are vast sums of money to be spread around to combat this latest scourge. The fact is that people get sick all the time. People often think that what they're suffering from is flu. So who knows how much of this reported illness is actually flu, and if so, that it's this new variety of flu. But for the sake of argument, let's ride this horse and see where it leads us. Let's assume all these health organizations are spot on, and every one of those reported illnesses are indeed the same strain of flu. Okay, what's new? Flu outbreaks occur every year or so. Some people die, most get sick to varying degrees, and then recover. What's so special about this one? As I said before, 26 people died in Mexico, but we don't know their age nor health prior to dying from this flu. Much of the world is reporting cases of this variety of the flu, but no deaths. No deaths, folks. So why the media fear campaign? Oh, the latest news, a death in the good old USA. Are you scared yet? It was a 2-year-old child. Not exactly a robust individual with a fully developed immune system. I don't mean to minimize the death of a child, but this is hardly the cause for national alarm. This story is being blown way out of proportion, which leads to the next question. Why? Here's my take. But first, three quotes from President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He seemed to know something about politics. The first, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. The second, if anything happens in the political arena, it was meant to happen. In politics, there are no accidents. And finally, a third quote, and this quote is significant because it was mentioned by Barack Obama recently. When asked by a constituent to champion a particular cause, FDR listened to his arguments and then replied, "Personally, I agree with your position and everything you said, but politically, you're going to have to make me do it." So how does this relate to the rapidly escalating media scare that we should all run out and get flu shots and then barricade ourselves in our homes? They aren't saying that yet, but it is obviously leading up to that, and we'll get there if it needs to. And why do I say if it needs to? Because since there's an agenda at play here. I sense there's an agenda at play here. I don't think this is an accident, nor a natural occurrence. The timing is just too suspicious. Step back for a moment. What were the two most prominent items in the news before being eclipsed by this health scare? The economic plunder of the American Treasury, and the revelation that the highest elements of the Bush administration authorized torture of helpless prisoners, even before 9/11. Obama obviously does not intend to prosecute the Bush officials responsible, nor does he intend to go after the Wall Street banksters and corporate scoundrels who continue to pad their nests with our money. No one can say what Obama really thinks, but it's obvious he is invoking FDR's position. I may believe what you believe, but I'm a politician, and this is politics. If you want me to act, you have to force me to act. Well, the pressure is off now. The media, who determine what most of the public thinks, is successfully switching our focus from these potential time bombs to the far more immediate fear for our very health. And once again, the public outrage has been muted, their oh-so-brief attention span diverted from issues embarrassing to the elite to matters not threatening the powers that be. Mission accomplished. Okay, all the above assumes that this supposed health crisis was somehow created and then unleashed at a time convenient for the elite. So the natural question is that even possible? Can anyone, no matter how clever, create a disease? And if so, could any organization call it into play at their beckoning? Anyone doubting either of these possibilities has really not been paying attention. The U.S. military has, for decades, had weapons laboratories whose sole purpose has been to invent and stockpile biological weapons. And for those living under rocks, a manufactured flu strain is a biological weapon. What's that, you say? We have signed treaties that prevent us from producing biological weapons? Indeed we have. But as Dick Cheney famously said, so? The sad truth is that ever since conning the then-free Native Americans into signing the treaties that robbed them of their civilization, the U.S. government has ignored every piece of paper they ever signed, whenever it suited them. So one must ask, is this new flu strain natural or manufactured? The Internet is filled with articles claiming that this flu strain is a combination of swine flu, bird flu, and human flu strains, and that it is virtually impossible that it's natural. I'm not a scientist, and so I'm not qualified to judge the veracity of such claims. But I can say the arguments I've glanced at, sent to me by at least 15 or 20 readers, are compelling. But these seemingly well-researched articles are claiming that the SARS scare, which was also called avian or bird flu, was man-made, and it was essentially a failure, and that it didn't do what it was designed to do, so that the immoral scientists in their not-so-secret labs went back to work and came up with this, their latest effort. And here it is, just in time to divert our attention from prosecuting the Bush crowd for breaking national and international law by approving and encouraging torture, as well as going after the perpetrators of the latest looting of the American people. Okay, that's my take. If you guys want to rush out and get your flu shots, go right ahead. Just keep in mind that you have no idea what your benevolent government is actually injecting into you. And even if it doesn't harm you, there's absolutely no proof that any of the flu shots in any way protect you from catching flu, nor lessen any of the effects if you do catch flu. The only thing we do know for certain about flu shots is that they're terrific moneymakers for the pharmaceutical industry, as well as keeping government health organizations busy doing something to justify their existence and their funding. So, if you want to get flu shots, I quote Bob Dylan, I just say good luck. One final note before moving on. King George the Mentally Challenged and his Black Prince Cheney, you do remember them, don't you? Well, one of their more onerous pieces of legislation set up the mechanism for the institution of martial law in case of many different types of emergencies. And prominent in that list were national health emergencies, like a flu pandemic. Will we end up under martial law from this outbreak of a possibly man-made flu? I don't think so. But if the economy really fails and the public becomes hostile, I'm sure it sure is a convenient excuse for martial law. And so we must ask, are we being prepared for this possibility? softened up like a fighter who throws body blows for the first few rounds to soften up his opponent before going to the head for the knockout. One postscript before I move on. Featured prominently in the media hype are reminders of the great Spanish flu epidemic of, I think it was around 1920 or so. I tried to locate an article that I had that claimed that the true cause of the epidemic was not the flu at all, but I couldn't locate that article. If any listener has any information on the controversial true cause of the Spanish flu epidemic of that era, please send it to me, chamba@kvmr.org. Okay, on to other news. Will Barack Obama allow members of the Bush-Cheney administration to be prosecuted for allowing and encouraging torture? The Republicans are aghast at the idea, so this quote might be of interest. Here's the quote. The United States participated actively and effectively in the negotiation of the Convention Against Torture. It marks a significant step in the development during this century of international measures against torture and other inhumane treatment or punishment. Ratification of the convention by the United States will clearly express United States opposition to torture, an abhorrent practice unfortunately still prevalent in the world today. The core provisions of the convention establish a regime for international cooperation in the criminal prosecution of torturers, relying on so-called universal jurisdiction. Each state party is required either to prosecute torturers who are found in its territory or to extradite them to other countries for prosecution. By giving its advice and consent to ratification of this convention, the Senate of the United States will demonstrate unequivocally our desire to bring an end to the abhorrent practice of torture. Close quote. Current Republicans would insist this quote is from a flaming liberal. Was it? Not exactly. That was Ronald Reagan in a signing statement ratifying the UN Convention on Torture, 1984. Wait a minute. Wasn't Ronald Reagan a revered idol over the Republicans? Wasn't his every utterance quoted as if it was from the Bible? How times have changed for the Republicans. Next item. Sometimes it's hard for me to tell the difference between BBC News and Monty Python. Monday morning's BBC News had an item about Pakistan. It seems the Pakistani government and the Taliban signed a truce in a border region. Then, at the prodding of the United States government, the Pakistan government invaded that region. So they attacked Taliban, while dodging Pakistani government bullets and U.S. missiles, declared the truce to be a sham and worthless, upon which the government insisted the truce was still in effect. Maybe it's an unfair question, but don't both sides have to stop fighting for there to be a truce? George Orwell would have loved it. Next item. And now for some news from the surreal world. This is from the San Francisco Chronicle. A bronze statue honoring the 2006 Kentucky Derby winner Barbero was unveiled on Sunday morning at Churchill Downs, Kentucky, nearly 3 years after the colt became an icon following a breakdown at the Preakness. An icon, mind you. The horse broke down during the Preakness and spent the next 8 months battling for his life. Hundreds of fans, who were moved by the horse's battle for survival, attended the ceremony. I hope any listeners worried about paying your next month's rent or feeding your family will be heartened by this news. There was no mention of any large and expensive bronze statues being erected in Kentucky for all the single parents who were too busy surviving to pay attention to horse races. And now we turn to an article from, I believe it was yesterday's Grass Valley Union. Top cop wants pot shops barred. Rising crime statistics surrounding metropolitan medical marijuana dispensaries have prompted Grass Valley Police Chief John Foster to ask for an emergency moratorium on pot shop operations in town. Quote, no one is currently trying to open a dispensary, but we want to be proactive and not run into problems that have occurred throughout the state. He forgets to mention that throughout the state was in major metropolitan areas, not rural areas. The problem now is that the city has no regulation in place. They don't need a regulation in place. All they have to do is look at the issue when it arises, if it arises. The city's top law officer will ask for an ordinance. That was last night. I've heard of people wanting to open dispensaries, but I've told them to be very careful, said Nevada County District Attorney Cliff Newell. California Attorney General Jerry Brown has sent out guidelines for medical marijuana dispensaries, and it's awfully restrictive, Newell said. It has to be absolutely non-profit. Is that really non-restrictive? Or terribly restrictive? Seems pretty simple to me. Back to the article. Last week, Foster was at the California Police Chiefs Association meeting on medical marijuana and was given statistics from San Francisco and Los Angeles police that showed crime increased around dispensaries then. Hello, it's still San Francisco and Los Angeles. It's not a rural area. The article then goes on to quote the statistics quoted by Foster. But I want to commend the union for some pretty good reporting because they didn't end it there. It looks like they also contacted the owner of the nearest marijuana dispensary, which is in neighboring Colfax. So I'll continue with the article. Nevada County has no known medical pot dispensaries, according to James Henry, who opened one in Colfax 5 years ago. It's been operating for 5 years. The dispensary owner said he has no problems with Colfax area police and no violent incidents have occurred since he opened. I don't want gangsters peddling pot in town anywhere either, he said. I think we do a good job here and the patients are grateful. We help them eat and sleep. Looks like the union also made calls to the Placer County Sheriff's Department for comment about Henry's business, but those calls were not returned. So the question is this a real problem, or is it Chief Foster just trying to stir up some muck? Or what is he doing? But is it a problem? I read, you decide. The time is 12:25. The radio station's KVMR-FM, broadcasting out of Nevada City, California. Your host is Chambalane. The name of the show is Rabble Rousing. And in case anybody doesn't recall, anything that you hear on this show or any other show on KVMR represents the opinions of the speakers only, and not necessarily that of KVMR management staff, underwriters, or people that wander through. I don't even know if the promo came out, but I was planning on turning this show over to listeners for call-ins, and we will get around to that. So if you've been promised, we will deliver. Next article. Humboldt County cites cities restrict the military. This is by Matthew B. Stannard in the Chronicle. Well, Arcata's at it again with a law blocking the military from recruiting anybody in town under the age of 18. And this time the law has the backing not of a few city council activists, but of thousands of voters who went to the polls in November. On that same day, voters in Eureka, a historically politically staid city a dozen miles away, surprised everybody by approving an identical measure. In the past, Arcata's quirky pokes at Washington have been shrugged off as the antics of pot-drenched students and patchouli-scented hippies, for whom the 60s never quite died. Passionate, but largely irrelevant. This time, the federal government isn't shrugging. A court hearing is scheduled in October on June 9th, in Oakland on June 9th, on the government's demand that the city's laws be overturned for seeking powers constitutionally granted to the federal government. Characteristically, anti-war cities, including San Francisco and Berkeley, have tried to battle military recruitment. But nobody can recall a case where a city used the ballot box as a counter-recruitment tool, an act that has broader significance. It touches on a couple of core issues that really relate to the foundation of government, said Alan Weiner, a senior lecturer at Stanford Law School, the questions of what areas belong to the federal government and which belongs to the state. That argument is usually classified as the Tenth Amendment argument, because the Tenth Amendment of the Constitution very clearly and simply states that any issues not specifically delegated to the federal government belong to state governments, along with many of the Bill of Rights. That one's been ignored for generations. Back to the article. The fact that Eureka followed suit tells me it's more about independent thinking, said Laura Middlemiss, who was born and raised in Arcata, raised three kids there, and felt the recruiters calling her kids at home went too far. The reason this measure passed in this region is that people don't want to be told what to do, In its lawsuit, the government lawyers claim the country will suffer irreparable harm if the Arcata and Eureka laws are allowed to stand. Wow, I'm quaking in my boots at the mere thought of that. Few people believe the laws will survive the legal challenge. Win or lose, for backers of this legislation, the election demonstrated that activists can be more effective by reaching out to mainstream voters instead of putting all their resources into rallies or symbolic resolutions. And this is a message that is spreading amongst activists from Berkeley to back east. So, for your activists, you might want to consider that, putting your energy into trying to pass laws and ordinances. In other words, taking back your government instead of waiting for your elected supposed representatives to do something. Just a thought. Next article. Is the rise of sea levels one of the greatest lies ever told? And this article is from the Telegraph out of the United Kingdom. The uncompromising verdict of Dr. Mourner is that all this talk about the sea rising is nothing but a colossal scare story. This was written by Christopher Booker in the Telegraph out of the UK. If one thing more than any other is used to justify proposals that the world must spend tens of trillions of dollars on combating global warming, it is the belief that we face a disastrous rise in sea levels. The Antarctic and Greenland ice caps will melt, we're told. Warming oceans will expand, and the result will be catastrophic. Although the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, only predicts a sea level rise of 17 inches by 2100, Al Gore, in his Oscar-winning film An Inconvenient Truth, went much further, talking of 20 feet rather than 17 inches, and showing computer graphics of cities such as Shanghai and San Francisco half underwater. We all know the graphic showing central London in a similar plight. As for tiny island nations such as the Maldives and Tuvalu, as Prince Charles likes to tell us, and the Archbishop of Canterbury was again parroting last week, they're due to vanish. But if there's one scientist who knows more about sea levels than anyone else in the world, it is the Swedish geologist and physicist Nils Axel Mourner, formerly chairman of the INQUA, International Committee on Sea Level Change. And the uncompromising verdict of Dr. Mourner, who for 35 years has been using every known scientific method to study sea levels all over the globe, is that all this talk about the sea rising is nothing but a colossal scare story. Despite fluctuations down as well as up, the sea is not rising, he says. It hasn't risen in 50 years. If there's any rise this century, it will not be more than 10 centimeters, which is 4 inches, with an uncertainty of plus or minus that same 10 centimeters. And quite apart from examining the hard evidence, he says, the elemental laws of physics, latent heat needed to melt ice, tells us the apocalypse conjured up by Al Gore and company could not possibly come about. The reason why Dr. Mourner, formerly a Stockholm professor, is so certain these claims about sea level rise are 100% wrong is that they're all based on computer model predictions, whereas his findings are based on going into the field to observe what is actually happening in the real world. When running the International Commission on Sea Level Change, he launched a special project in the Maldives, whose leaders have for 20 years been calling for vast sums of international aid to stave off disaster. 6 times, he and his expert team visited the islands to confirm that the sea has not risen for half a century. Before announcing his findings, he offered to show the inhabitants a film explaining why they had nothing to worry about, but the government refused to let it be shown. Similarly, in Tuvalu, where local leaders have been calling for the inhabitants to be evacuated for 20 years, the sea has, if anything, dropped in recent decades. The only evidence the scaremongers can cite is based on the fact that extracting groundwater for pineapple growing has allowed seawater to seep in to replace it. Meanwhile, Venice has been sinking rather than the Adriatic rising, says Dr. Mourner. One of his most shocking discoveries was why the IPCC has been able to show sea level rising by 2.3 millimeters a year. Until 2003, even its own satellite-based evidence showed no upward trend. But suddenly, the graph tilted upwards because the IPCC's favored experts had drawn on the findings of a single tide gauge in Hong Kong Harbor, showing a 2.3 millimeter rise. The entire global sea level projection was then adjusted upwards by a corrective factor of 2.3 millimeters because, as the IPCC scientists admitted, they needed to show a trend. When I spoke to Dr. Mohrner last week, he expressed his continuing dismay at how the IPCC has fed the scare on this critical issue. When asked to act as an expert reviewer on the IPCC's last two reports, he was astonished to find that not one of their 22 contributing authors on sea levels was a sea level specialist. Not one. Yet the results of all this deliberate ignorance and reliance on rigged computer models have become the most powerful single driver of the entire warmest hysteria. For more information on this, you can see Dr. Mohrner on YouTube, and there's a link for that. You can read on the net his 2007 EIR interview, and you can also email him to buy a copy of his booklet, The Greatest Lie Ever Told. My comment. I want to add to this my personal knowledge of the Caribbean Ocean taking land from beaches in Costa Rica. It's been going on for decades, ever since the Black Caribbean settled on the Costa Rican coast, and it's been exacerbated by the settlers destroying the protecting coral reefs. But the loss of the coastal beaches is a natural phenomenon. It's going been up to 5 meters per year since the last century. Global warming, cooling, or not. The villages at Punta Mona are gone. Cahuita Village is gone. It's nature at work. And that's irregardless of man. Yes, it was exacerbated by men cutting the coral. But it had nothing to do with global heating, cooling, or anything else. Next item. This is an astrological prediction from my favorite internet astrologer. The end of April, all of May, and most of June, our economy is going to really tank again. Major, major collapse. Big, bad, and ugly. The Dow will be down 4,000, maybe lower. Whether the collapse is from currency issues or hedge funds or banks remains to be seen. And then, of course, that we don't know the effect of it from this swine flu business. Venus goes direct on April 18th. Jupiter goes direct on June 16th, so you can expect chaos between those two dates, and you might expect I'll learn how to pronounce chaos correctly. Okay, so who knows if any of that's going to take place. I read, you decide. Okay, I had hoped to open the phone lines and have you guys phone in. I've been gone for 3 months. And I was curious, during the 3 months I've been gone, what you guys thought was important on the news. And also, we've had a new president. What do you think? Has President Obama made any significant changes in your country, in your lifestyle, in your way of life? What's he done? What do you think? So the phone lines are now open. You're welcome to phone in. Try and keep your comments fairly brief and to the point, because hopefully we'll have quite a few people that want to contribute. Caller, you're live on the air. Caller?
Me?
You.
Oh.
Yeah.
1 sec.
Yeah, and please turn your radio down.
It is done.
There we go.
Okay.
What you think?
Well, I'm concerned. And pardon me for being haltering, perhaps I can make this really brief here. The idea of, like Roosevelt talked about, make me do it, and
right.
You gave a reference to the fact that, and I had heard that, that was actually one of Obama's themes.
Yes.
So I guess my question is, I'm not seeing any huge mobilizations, even something on the order of Seattle.
We're not making him do anything.
Right.
We're not pressuring him.
I don't see the pressure groups forming.
I have to agree.
And if I'm not mistaken, that's how that's why FDR spoke of that, was because the only reason anything happened in the 30s to create some of the benefits we have for the people were because there was a tremendous amount of organization occurring, not just in the unions.
Okay, but straight across the board. One could make the same argument for the ending of the Vietnam War, that it took massive public pressure.
One could. Now, another thing that about this, that this is, now I'm looking into solutions, and Amy Goodman in her talk spoke about the fact that what we really need to do is present people with images and not talk. The bottom line is, like in Vietnam, in the Vietnam era, we watched on television what was happening in Vietnam, at least what they allowed us to see, which was grueling enough.
Yep.
Now, this embedded reported process is
taking that away.
Taking it away. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, she made a proposal to say, okay, let's just for 1 month open up all the media channels so that imagery from Afghanistan and from all the different situations in the world are shown.
Okay, but it's the same problem. Amy makes a nice suggestion, but how are we going to pressure the powers that be into doing that?
Exactly, which brings us back to the first point, which is how does one catalyze and organize something of that nature?
Right.
So to summarize and to say, well, I think that we should storm the FCC with all the Green Berets and Rangers and other people who have been, abandoned by their government and are really angry about it and would like to create a new social order.
Okay.
So literally take over the FCC, fire the corporations, confiscate the media corporations, confiscate their equipment. Literally, because they're a national security threat. The only reason for doing this is this is a national security issue. And as you've noted, they basically are leading the public by the nose into fear. And they've been doing this consistently.
Okay.
So at that point, then, once we've taken back, I believe, our airways, isn't it? Don't we rent them out, like, for free? So we take them back, and then we utilize the equipment in the stations and start doling them out, I don't know, maybe through a lottery to all sorts of independent producers.
Okay. I think you've made some very valid points, and we've got some other people wanting to phone in. So,
thanks for letting me talk.
Okay. Thanks for your call. Caller, it's your turn. You're live on KVMR. Caller?
Hello?
You're live on KVMR.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I have a thought on the swine flu, so-called pandemic.
Go for it.
I work in healthcare, and I see a lot of immigrant children and children of migrant workers of Hispanic descent. And one of the things that's not being mentioned, it's really interesting that everybody's scratching their head, and the media is saying, well, we can't figure out why people are dying in Mexico, but they're having mild cases everywhere else.
Right.
Well, one of the things that makes the Mexican healthcare system different from ours is that antibiotics are freely available over the counter and are misused. And
overused.
Overused, and it's common knowledge also that in order for antibiotics to work, they have to be properly prescribed, and you have to take the entire course.
Right.
One of the reasons there are so many resistant strains of bacteria in Mexico is because the bacteria have time to become resistant to the drug because the people don't take the drugs long enough to actually get the desired effect.
Right.
And the other thing is that when you have flu, one of the most common things that happens with flu is flu weakens your immune system, and then you are susceptible to a secondary bacterial infection, which is what actually makes you sick and kills you. So my question is why hasn't anybody thought of the idea that maybe these people in Mexico are people whose immune system's been weakened by the flu, and then they're dying of a resistant strain of bacteria?
They're dying of almost anything at that point.
Well, yeah, at that point. Yeah. And here in our country, in our healthcare system, we do have resistant strains of bacteria also, but they're almost always confined to the hospitals where the antibiotics are used.
Uh-huh.
Because antibiotics are not freely available over the counter to the general population.
Mm-hmm.
So why hasn't anybody considered that? It seems very obvious to me that that's the fundamental difference between the Mexican healthcare system and ours. That's
okay.
all I wanted to say.
Thank you very much. And
mm-hmm.
just let me piggyback onto that. And that is, when you say, why hasn't anybody thought of that, we don't know what people are thinking. All we know is what the media tells us. And the media is not telling us those sort of things. So thanks very much for your presenting them.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Caller, you're live on KVMR.
Good afternoon, Chamba.
Yep.
I believe I understood Travis T. Hip to say this morning that the town where this originated was just downstream
right.
from a huge swine factory,
mm-hmm.
and that it would be, hold on for a second, Kwong, and that it would be as a result from that, the release of pollutants that had not been properly processed and so forth. He was saying that a lot of the U.S. Swine or hog farms had moved there because of the lack of regulations, and that, in his opinion, that was
Yeah, so that's a possible source, or one might say a probable source of the contamination. Yes.
Correct.
Okay.
Right.
And do you have a further point, or do you just wanted to point that out?
Just an awareness that it is again man-made, but not quite as overtly as suggested.
Yeah. And when I say it was man-made, what I was referring to is the internet is absolutely awash
right.
with all sorts of people and organizations that are claiming that this particular strain is not just swine flu. It's a combination, a very unique combination of swine flu, avian flu, and a human flu virus, and that they are claiming that this would be impossible to occur in nature.
Understood. It is a cocktail that was concocted.
So if that is so, let's play conspiracy theory to the max here. If that was so, and if agents wanted to release that for whatever reasons, then a perfect place to release that would be near a large swine production factory in a foreign country.
Right, a little camouflage.
Yep,
stories.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah,
well,
you got to drop it somewhere.
I appreciate you bringing this all to light. It's very thought-provoking, and wonderful to have you back.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Okay. Yeah, and I point out all of this is conjecture. You guys have to decide for yourselves. Caller, you're live on the air. It's your turn.
Hey, Chamba, this is Charlie, and I just wanted to point out what I think Obama is doing a masterful job of creating the environment for public demand for the torture investigation and eventual conviction
mm-hmm.
by releasing all the
Torture memos.
All the documents that mm-hmm. Normally a president would keep as a national security issue and not release them.
Mm-hmm. Very good point.
So rather than go in swinging himself,
mm-hmm.
which would be seen as
a partisan political move.
Exactly.
Yep. Very good point.
So I think he's doing a great job.
Oh, that's a terrific perspective. And
in
that case,
thank you for your show, Chamba. It's great to have you back, man.
Oh, thank you. Okay, so let's piggyback on that. If this last caller was right and that's what Obama's doing, sounds like he's a leader.
Yes, but...
He's leading.
Leading us to force
yep.
the issue so
Good.
That he can make it happen.
Excellent point. Thanks for calling.
Bye.
Caller, it's your turn. You're live on KVMR.
Hi.
You got to turn your radio down. You get feedback. Okay. You either have feedback or you're on a cell phone in a poor area because we're getting... Give it a try.
All right. In regards to the infant that died in Texas...
Yep.
That was actually a Mexican citizen who had been brought to Houston for treatment.
Right. So the poor infant was already sick by the time she arrived, and then she died on U.S. soil. Correct.
Unfortunate that happened.
Okay. Thanks for pointing that out. Is that it? Yep.
That's it.
Caller, it's your turn. You're live on KVMR.
Hi.
Yep.
You had a caller who talked about the abuse of antibiotics in Mexico.
Right.
I just want to point out that the swine flu is a virus, not a bacterial infection, so that cannot possibly have anything to do with it.
Okay, and I think the point they were making is that the misuse of antibiotics compromises the immune system and weakens the immune system. And once you have a weakened immune system, then you're subject to almost anything.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Fair enough.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah, and thanks for that clarification. Okay, we have approximately 10 minutes left, and let's broaden the scope of our call-ins. I want to know what you guys think that Obama has done that has been commendable, what you're disappointed in, those sorts of things. Broad view, perspective on our new president. Okay? Caller, you're live on the air.
Yeah, Chamba, it's really good to have you back, buddy.
Thank you.
As far as Obama goes, I think the man is definitely a leader. He's gone in there and shown us how he can get things done and work with both parties, and he can get the public involved.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest thing. There's no more closed-door cloak-and-dagger stuff going on. He's not afraid to just tell it like it is and then let the public get their ire up and start demanding stuff. And power of people is pretty strong thing.
Well, let's hope so.
You know?
Yeah.
My only disagreement about everybody getting all up in air about this water, what they call it, waterboarding? And,
yes.
You know? I mean, yeah, it's a shame that had to happen, but war is hell, Chamba. And, you know, we haven't had any further attacks over here because we've been able to get a lot of information and stop them. And
that's one theory.
You know, I just think that whatever they need to do, they need to do.
They being the CIA and the elements that are supposedly working in our interest?
Yeah, I'm 66 years old, and God knows what all went on back when you and, well, I don't know how old you are, but back when I was a kid, you know, there was a lot of double agent stuff going on that kept us safe and secure over here.
And well, okay.
You know, and I think people are going to have to realize that certain things have to go on, you know, to maintain this country to be free. I may not totally agree with what they're doing, but just leave the media out of it and let these people do what they got to do. And
that scares the hell out of me.
Well, yeah, it does me too. And
you also, okay, let me disagree with you on another point. Yes, we have not had any attacks since 9/11. The question is, were we really attacked on 9/11, or were elements of our own government attacking us on 9/11?
Well, that's another thing, too. That's another issue. That's
okay.
True.
All right.
Just like this flu thing. This flu thing could have been made up.
Yep. And some people are claiming it has.
Well, and it could be. We don't know. You know, it could be a way to get rid of population.
Yep.
So who knows?
Yeah, or take away more of our civil rights, because, of course, again, some people on the Internet are pointing out that there's already legislation on the books that sets up the possibility of martial law, and one of those possibilities for martial law is a national health emergency.
Well, I kind of think that they're trying to do that. I really do.
Okay.
Yeah,
there you are.
I agree with you there, Tom, 100%.
Okay. Let's. You want to give some other callers a chance?
Yes, sir.
Thank you for your call.
Bye.
Bye. Caller, it's your turn. You're live on KVMR.
Well, hello. My name's Max Power Grabber, and I'm calling from the Illuminati.
So happy to have your phone call. What do you have to tell us?
I just wanted you to know that I think our man Obama is doing a great job for us.
Okay.
People believe him, and we're grabbing power faster than ever before.
Okay. I think you've made your point.
Thank you.
Thank you for your call. Caller, it's your turn. You're live on KVMR.
Hey, welcome back, Chamba.
Thank you.
I'd just like to say, in terms of Biden, that, you know, we still are practicing extraordinary rendition. We still have secret prisons around the world, as well as CMUs, considered secret prisons here in the U.S. And I agree. I'm a little frightened about that one caller who suggested that we ought to just let them do what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Stalin wanted to do and succeeded.
That's what they all want us to do.
So I'd like to suggest a film called America, From Freedom to Fascism. You can get it at DVD stores, search it online. It's available through Netflix, and it's a very important
Was that Aaron Russo's film?
Aaron Russo's film, yeah.
Okay, thanks for that.
Thank you.
Yeah. I want to piggyback onto what the last caller just said. The thing that disappoints me the most about Obama is that Bush and Cheney took away a lot of our basic freedoms. They trashed the Bill of Rights. I expected Obama to reverse some of that. He hasn't touched it. He hasn't reversed any of the onerous aspects of the USA Patriot Act, the Military Commissions Act, habeas corpus. In those areas, he hasn't done anything. My personal viewpoint is that Obama has done quite a bit in small areas. But in those major areas, he hasn't touched them. And that I'm very disappointed in that. Caller, it's your turn. You're live on KVMR.
Hi. You asked for an opinion on Obama.
Yes, please.
And I agree with the habeas corpus. So that's a big deal that he hasn't done anything to undo that. In addition, he hasn't kept two of his promises that are very disappointing.
Which were?
One was to give employers a $3,000 tax credit for new employees.
Okay.
And the other, especially given the stock market impact on older people, he had said that anyone making less than $50,000 wouldn't have to pay income tax. So,
good point. Okay. He hasn't come through on those.
Given economics, those are two big deals.
Okay. Thanks for pointing that out.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Caller, it's your turn. You're live on KVMR.
Yeah, I have 2 points about Obama. I think he's loosened things up regarding stem cell research.
Okay, yes.
He lifted that ban.
Yep.
I think he's loosening things up regarding Cuba.
Yes, he seems to be doing.
Which is really good.
Yep.
And I wanted to ask you what personal freedoms that you've lost.
Personally, I haven't lost any freedoms at all because the laws on the books are not being implemented. But if you look at the laws that can be implemented because they're now laws, they're terrifying.
Mm.
But
okay.
I think that's a very important distinction, is the laws are on the books, but they're not being implemented. And so,
okay, what laws exactly, and I'll take it off the air. Thanks. I'm going to hang up and
sure.
Let you go.
Okay, and I'm sorry, I'm not a legal scholar, so I cannot quote you chapter and verse. But the laws against illegal search and seizure, totally trashed. Wiretapping is legal. Entering your house without a search warrant is legal. So if you look at the Bill of Rights, I suggest that you just look down the 10 Bill of Rights and see how many of them still exist. And you'll find that quite a few of them don't. And I'm sorry, I can't give you a more definitive answer than that. Okay, caller, this is going to be the last call because we're running low on time. You're on the air.
Yeah, great. I just want to mention one great documentary.
Yep.
It's called The Obama Deception. It just came out about a month ago. You can look it up online at prisonplanet.com. Great, great documentary. Everything is backed up by major news sources. So
okay. Would you send me the link to that, please?
Yeah, sure. I can do that.
Okay. Chamba at KVMR.
Okay. No
Thank
problem.
You. All right. You're the last call. You're live on the air.
Chamba, that's a movie that the gentleman suggested.
Yep.
To see Freedom. What was the rest of it?
Oh, I'm sorry. It was Aaron Russo.
Aaron Russo.
Yeah.
Okay.
From Freedom to Fascism, I think is the name of it.
Freedom to Fascism.
I believe so. But the filmmaker was Aaron Russo, Russo.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Just about out of time. Do I have time? I want to squeeze this in. In 2003, police in Warwickshire, England, opened a garden shed and found a whimpering, cowering dog. It had been locked in the shed and abandoned. It was dirty and malnourished and had clearly been abused. In an act of kindness, the police took the dog, which was a greyhound female, to the nearby wildlife sanctuary, and it was known as a willing haven for animals abandoned, orphaned, or otherwise in need. The sanctuary staff went to work with two aims, to restore the dog to full health and to win her trust. It took several weeks, but eventually both goals were achieved. They named her Jasmine, and they started to think about finding her an adoptive home. But Jasmine had other ideas. No one remembers now how it began, but she started welcoming all animal arrivals at the sanctuary. It wouldn't matter if it was a puppy, a fox cub, a rabbit, or any other lost or hurting animal. Jasmine would peer into the box or cage and, where possible, deliver a welcoming lick. They relate one of the early incidents. We had two puppies that had been abandoned by a nearby railway line. One was a Lakehead Terrier cross and the other a Jack Russell Doberman cross. They were tiny when they arrived at the center, and Jasmine approached them and grabbed one by the scruff of the neck and her mouth and put him on a settee. She then fetched the other one and sat down with him, cuddling them. But she's like that with all of our animals, even the rabbits. She takes all of the stress out of them, and it helps them not only to feel close to her, but to settle into their new surroundings. She's done the same with the fox and badger cubs. She licks the rabbits and guinea pigs and even lets the birds perch on the bridge of her nose. Jasmine, the timid, abused, deserted waif, became the sanctuary's resident surrogate mother, and a role for which she might have been born. The list of orphaned and abandoned youngsters she has cared for comprises 5 fox cubs, 4 badger cubs, 15 chicks, 8 guinea pigs, 2 stray puppies, and 15 rabbits. One roe deer fawn was found semi-conscious in a field. Upon arrival at the sanctuary, Jasmine cuddled up to her to keep her warm and then went into the full foster mom role. Jasmine, the greyhound, showers bramble the roe deer with affection and makes sure nothing is matted. "They're inseparable," said the keeper. Bramble walks between her legs, and they keep kissing each other. They walk together around the sanctuary. It's a real treat to see them. Jasmine will continue to care for Bramble until she's old enough to be returned to woodland life. When that happens, Jasmine will not be lonely. She'll be too busy showering love and affection on the next orphan or victim of abuse. And then there's a picture of Jasmine with all of her people, the animal she's caring for. Jasmine has a mother's heart, doing best what a caring mother would do. So, some good in the world. All right, we're out of time. Thank you to Grass Valley Hydro Garden, serving the hydroponic and organic gardening needs of Nevada County since 2000.